The research and information that we report during today's broadcast was supported by the National Institute on Minority Health and Health Disparities of the National Institutes of Health under award number 5U54MD00860802. The content is solely the responsibility of the authors and does not necessarily represent the official views of the National Institutes of Health.
Want to make a change for once in my life.
Welcome to Make the Change, your weekly dose of inspiration for creating positive change in your life. Learn how changing your thoughts, feelings, words, and actions can lead to the life you desire and deserve. No need to go it alone. Let us become part of your journey to get from where you are to where you want to be. Every Saturday at noon, the show's host, Patricia Terrell, and her fabulous guests will lead you with a weekly prescription to invigorate your mind, body, and soul. Wait not a minute more. It's time to get started with Make the Change.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Make the Change radio show. I'm your host, Patricia Terrell, and I would like to thank you for tuning in today. The call-in number for the show is 1-800-450-7876. Today's show is sponsored by Health Policy Research Consortium, also known as HPRC. HPRC's focus is public policy, and they want you to know about how policy can affect your health. To learn more about HPRC's research findings, blogs, as well as any of their posts and their website, be sure to visit www.hprc.info. Again, that's www.hprinfo, and you will also be able to find out about their Health Connect Prince George's app. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Breast cancer strikes fear in the heart of women and their loved ones alike. Unfortunately, too many women continue to die from this dreadful disease. This is especially true for African American women who are more likely to die from breast cancer, even though they are diagnosed at the same rate as white and Hispanic women. So today we're going to have a frank discussion about what causes breast cancer, the risk factors, what we need to know about prevention, and what the current research data shows. Most importantly, we'd like to discuss how public policy can help reduce the burden of this disease, including how to pay for screenings and how easy it is to navigate the healthcare system, even if you or your family member has been diagnosed with breast cancer. Joining me today is Dr. Edith Mitchell, Professor of Medical Oncology at the Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Thomas Jefferson University in Pennsylvania, and also she's the former president of the National Medical Association. Also joining me is Mr. Byron Soji Thomas, the Deputy Director for Health Policy Research and Analysis at the Health Policy Research Consortium, also known as HPRC. Dr. Mitchell and Byron Soji Thomas, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having us, and thank you for the program addressing breast cancer, because it's really a very important entity for all women, but especially for African-American women.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dr. Mitchell. And Mr. Byron Soji Thomas, you're there too, right?
Hi. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Patricia. Hello, Dr. Mitchell. Thank you to our listeners joining us. Hi.
Byron Soji Thomas, this issue of breast cancer is very important to HPRC. So tell us why and explain the role that public policy plays in breast cancer screening and prevention.
Yeah, so HPRC is concerned about all issues in healthcare that impact the vulnerable populations in the Mid-Atlantic region. So that's Maryland, D.C., Virginia, Pennsylvania, Delaware, West Virginia. And so our work is focused on figuring out what public policy does or can do to help relieve some of these healthcare problems and disparities in healthcare that we see, and disparities in health outcomes as well. And so breast cancer happens to be one of these where we see some of these disparities. We see from the research, for example, that even though white women and black women get breast cancer at about the same rate, black women are more likely to die from the disease. So anytime there are disparities like those in outcomes and in care and in access to care, we are concerned about those. And so we wanted to make sure that we could use this forum, as we do with our public health forums and all our other ways, our research material that we put out to inform the public. We wanted to use this platform as well to have this conversation. This is an observance where this is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and so we thought it was a good idea to bring this up and have this conversation with an expert.
And so HPRC, you do a lot in terms of getting information out about breast cancer awareness. Tell us how you go about doing that.
This is one of the ways to do it, where we have an expert on the line with us, talking to the community, talking to our audience. We do it through publications. We do it through public health forums, public policy forums, rather. So we have a newsletter. We have social media presence. So any way we can to make sure that people can hear the message that we're all in this together, that public policy can help us understand some of it, but there are things that impact your risk. There are things that can help you prevent it. There are things that you can do to take action quickly before it becomes a bigger problem. But public policy certainly helped to lay the foundation, and we'll talk more about that as our conversation goes on.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for that, Byron. Dr. Mitchell, let's talk about some of the causal factors. What are the causes of breast cancer?
Well, we really don't know all of the causes. Interestingly, in my patient population, the most common entity that is related to breast cancer is that I have no family history of breast cancer. So while family history is an important risk factor, the majority of women who are diagnosed with breast cancer do not have a family history. There are some entities that we know are associated, not necessarily causative, but associated. So women who are overweight tend to have a higher incidence of breast cancer. The diet is very important, and individuals who eat high caloric diet, especially those that have a high volume or amount of fat in the diet, that's a risk factor. Alcohol, more than two drinks per day, a higher incidence. Having a family history is a risk factor. But remember that most women who develop breast cancer do not have a family history. So those are all factors associated. Those factors that decrease the incidence of breast cancer are having an aspirin per day, women who exercise more than 150 minutes per week, and that's, of course, 30 minutes, 5 days a week, have a higher incidence. So women who exercise have a lower incidence of breast cancer. So those are factors that can decrease one's risk of breast cancer. However, women who have totally vegetarian diets, low amounts of fat in the diet, can also develop breast cancer. There's a lot of research ongoing trying to develop more and more technologies that will help us diagnose breast cancer at an earlier stage. The earlier the stage at diagnosis, the greater the incidence of cure.
Wow, this is really
early diagnosis.
Yeah, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but this is really interesting because I think a lot of us have been under the impression that most of the breast cancer incidences are the result of family history and not so much that we can, there's so much that we can do on an individual level. So this is really good information. You talked about how African-American women are more likely to have higher incidence of breast cancer and the mortality rate is high. Help us to tie that in. Would it be based on our lifestyles, income levels? What are the primary links that causes African-American women to have such high incidence and mortality?
So African-American women do not have a higher incidence. The incidence rate, the rate at which breast cancer actually develops, is about equal in the race. What is different is that African-American women have a 40% higher chance of dying of the disease. And that is because of a number of factors. First of all, African-American women have higher stages of cancer at the time of diagnosis, that is later stage disease, stages 2, 3, and 4. And the earlier that women develop breast cancer or it is diagnosed, the better the chance of survival. So African-American women are diagnosed at a much later stage and therefore have a higher death rate. African American women also tend to have more aggressive cancers. So a higher percentage of triple negative breast cancers. And by triple negative, I mean that there is no expression on the tumor of either the estrogen receptor, the progesterone receptor, or the HER2 receptor. And consequently, these triple negative tumors, which are twice as likely to occur in African American women, are more aggressive. We don't have enough drugs or medications for them, and the tumors tend to recur or come back more frequently after what has been thought to be effective early treatment.
But what makes that happen for African American women? What makes that triple X factor so prevalent?
We don't know all of the answers, but the anthropologists and epidemiologists and others are doing research on this. What is very clear in research from women diagnosed with breast cancer from Ghana is that there is about a 60 to 65% chance of having triple negative breast cancer. In Nigeria, it is about 85% chance of having triple negative breast cancer. And in the United States, it's roughly 35 to 40% of African American women with triple negative breast cancer. And in white women or Caucasians, it's roughly about 15%. So the higher the incidence of this triple negative breast cancer, the higher the incidence of death from the disease. So we don't know all of the answers, and therefore very important for women to undergo diagnostic procedures early, get that mammogram, and if there are differences or problems on the mammogram, further evaluation. Also, participating in clinical trials is very important. Those women who are diagnosed with breast cancer who participate in clinical trials, especially those from the National Cancer Institute are supported by the National Cancer Institute, tend to have better prognosis.
Well, let me ask you this. Okay, let me ask you this. Do you feel like African American women are not getting out to get screened properly because they are not aware of it, or is it just a fear of knowing? Because there is that fear of wanting to know. What do you find to be the most primary reasons?
So there are multiple reasons. There are some women who prefer not to undergo mammography, but that has changed substantially. What we find is that African American women are diagnosed with breast cancer at an earlier age. And that's where public policy comes into play, because the guidelines for mammography, for example, don't recommend a screening mammogram after age 40 or before age 40. However, many African American women develop breast cancer before age 40. And that's why it's so important, if the woman finds a nodule or a lump in her breast, she should seek help right away. And if the physician or healthcare provider does not recommend a mammogram, go get a second opinion. Because for the majority of young women with breast cancer, in which African Americans have a higher incidence of breast cancer at a young age, if there's a palpable abnormality, that no longer says that the woman should not get a mammogram before age 40.
Okay.
Anyone who can feel a lump in their breast should go on and get a mammogram.
Okay.
That's no longer screening.
Okay, let me bring Byron in, because Byron, Dr. Mitchell mentioned the role that public policy plays in terms of this, the age recommendation. And so let me ask you this. So can you tell us about this task force that is responsible for making these age recommendations? What do we need to know there from a policy standpoint?
Well, yeah, this is the United States Preventive Services Task Force, and they are an independent and volunteer panel of prevention experts. So they have specialties from pediatrics to oncology to all the different medical specialties. And they come together on a volunteer basis to look through clinical research and look through clinical practice and make these recommendations about how to do prevention for various diseases. So the most recent recommendations for breast cancer screening were that getting these mammographies before women turned 50 was doing more harm than good, because then you get all these false positives. You go do the mammogram, it looks positive, but it's not. And then that leads to an unnecessary biopsy. And then, you know, there's all the pain and suffering associated with that. So they were saying that all the research that they saw that, you know, for most women, the mammogram should start at 50 instead of 40. But as Dr. Mitchell just clearly pointed out, in the case of African American women, breast cancer has been showing up at younger ages. So if you wait till 50, you're missing a lot of women, and there are a lot of associated problems, including people who go undiagnosed and people who die prematurely and that kind of thing. So the public policy aspect here is helping populations to understand that while you can give these guidelines that affect entire populations, everybody should be willing to take this on a case-by-case basis. And as Dr. Mitchell has said, women should be willing, whenever they see problems and see symptoms, to act on it right away. And public policy's role is to make sure we can connect all these dots, that whereas we can make these recommendations for populations, we should also make sure that individual people know that there's an individual responsibility aspect here, where if you feel that there are symptoms that you need to get addressed and you need to see somebody like Dr. Mitchell to deal with whatever you're feeling.
Okay. Thank you for that.
So, I'd like to add to that, for women, African-American women have a higher incidence of what is called dense breast. And that simply means that the mammogram may not be able to see through the breast very clearly. Every woman should know if they have dense breasts or not. And if a woman has dense breasts, they can talk to their doctor or other provider about whether another test might be important for that woman. So some women who have dense breasts may need other diagnostic tests other than the mammogram. So knowing whether a woman's breasts are dense or not, very important. And if dense breasts, ask your doctor if another procedure might be helpful.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. And this is Patricia Terrell with Make the Change Radio Show, and we're talking about breast cancer awareness. And joining me is Dr. Edith Mitchell and Byron Soji Thomas. If you have a question regarding breast cancer, the number is 1-800-450-7876. You know, Dr. Mitchell, so often when we hear about breast cancer, we naturally think of women, but men are also impacted by breast cancer, maybe not by large numbers, but tell us about that. What do we need to know?
That is absolutely correct. Breast cancer can occur in men, and approximately 1,500 men are diagnosed with breast cancer in the United States annually. So very important for men also. If there is a palpable nodule, see your doctor, ask about it, and if the doctor tells you it's not important, go get a second opinion, because it's very, very important. Another aspect of care is very important, and that is our patient advocacy. Advocacy for breast cancer is really very important, and these can be events at the church, in the community, at work, and I have patients who actually, at the Bridge Club, have a program on breast cancer prior to playing bridge. So whatever community event where one can ask questions, talk with other women who have experienced breast cancer, or talk with other women who know about screening for breast cancer, that's very important. So it's very important for individuals to talk with people in your church, talk with your neighbors, talk with friends and family,
about breast cancer, because talking with other people allows one to find out other experiences, to know where screening occurs, to know whether there are free mammograms available for individuals who don't have insurance or don't have insurance that covers mammography. So very important to talk with other individuals.
Absolutely. And you mentioned screening. I was going to talk about that later, but let me just go ahead and talk about that now, because I'm sure, Byron Soji Thomas, you want to talk about some of the free screenings that are available here in the D.C. metropolitan area. And Dr. Mitchell, you may want to add some as well. Byron, did you want to go ahead and comment?
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Mitchell, for that. Yeah. So local hospitals have their own outreach to make sure that people are aware that this is something that you should be paying attention to. So, for example, there's a doctor's hospital in Nanham. They have a breast and cervical cancer screening program there. At George Washington University Hospital in the district, they have their own screening, free screening opportunity there. You can call their number, go online and find them. They have a mammography van even, that's a mobile service. And so these are not just for breast cancer, but for all the other different kinds of cancers. Local hospitals sometimes have free screenings that go on a rotating basis. So you can, we will post some of this information on our website so you can get to it.
Yes, and that website is Okay, hold on 1 second, Dr. Mitchell. I just want to make sure they get the website, and that's www.hprc.info. Is that correct, Byron?
That's right.
Okay, go ahead, Dr. Mitchell.
Patricia, there are multiple screening programs. Howard University has a breast cancer screening program. Georgetown also, in addition to those that Byron mentioned, has a screening program. And Georgetown has a screening program that actually operates out of Southeast D.C. So asking questions about that are very important, because there are multiple screening programs with most of the institutions. So ask the question.
Okay, that's great information, and we thank you for that. Now, let's talk about, I mean, there's some listeners out there who've never had a mammogram. So let's talk about affordability. What are some of the costs associated with someone who wants to go and get a mammogram? Can you give us some idea about that, Dr. Mitchell?
Certainly. So most insurance programs have screening and preventive health included. And for many insurances, there is no cost or out-of-pocket cost to the patient to get a mammogram or other preventive services. A part of the Affordable Care Act, some call it Obamacare, but this policy allows for screening and preventive services with no added cost. So individuals should know their health plan, know what the health plan covers, and don't assume that one cannot get a mammogram or a colonoscopy or other preventive services. So we all need to ask the question. We need to know about our health, know about our health coverage. For individuals who don't have insurance, they should investigate through the Affordable Care Act which plans might be available to them, and take advantage of those plans. There are also the free programs that are available in multiple areas. So at this time, there is almost no excuse for an individual not undergoing a screening mammogram and a diagnostic mammogram if it is needed.
And tell us a little more about the free versions, because, you know, even though everyone's supposed to have health insurance, there's always someone out there who does not. And let's address what is free and how they can go about finding free screenings.
They can find free screenings by communicating with the nearby hospital.
2 minutes.
For example, most hospitals have individuals who are able to give patient information. So there may be intermittent free screening by multiple hospitals, the health department. The major medical institutions such as Howard University School of Medicine, George Washington, and Georgetown, they have screening programs that are continuous. The Centers for Disease Control, or CDC, funds each state for breast cancer and cervical cancer screening for women. And therefore, that's another opportunity to find out where the CDC programs are in each state. So whether you're in Virginia, the district, Maryland, Pennsylvania, or where, there are those free screening programs. One just has to search for them. And they may be different in each community, but they are available.
Okay. We have about a minute. Byron, do you want to add on this before we go to a break?
Yeah. So, yeah, Dr. Mitchell is absolutely right. And so we can find a collection of these and post them somewhere where you can get them in one place. We'll work on that to make sure you have it. But as Dr. Mitchell said, the CDC makes sure that this is either free or low cost wherever you are in the U.S. And to just to add to what she had said about the Affordable Care Act, she's absolutely right that it should come, you know, these prevention services should come at no extra cost.
Okay.
And the Affordable Care Act has made a lot of changes in terms of the fact that insurance companies can no longer charge you more for insurance because you're a woman.
Well, we're going to have to take a quick break, I'm told. Sorry about that, Byron. But we will come back on the other side and let you continue, okay? Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
If you live in Prince George's County, Maryland, listen up for this important announcement about how you can gain access to resources that can improve your health. The Health Policy Research Consortium, also known as HPRC, has a mobile app called Health Connect Prince George's that can help you find local resources such as farmers markets, parks and hike trails, recreation centers, community health centers, hospitals, pharmacies, and much more. The Health Connect Prince George's app is available for download on Google Play and the iTunes App Store. You can also visit www.hprc.info. That's www.hprc.info and click the links at the bottom of the page. Download the Health Connect app today to connect you and your community to a healthier tomorrow.
Welcome back. This is Patricia Terrell. Dr. Edith Mitchell, Professor of Medical Oncology at Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Thomas Jefferson University in Pennsylvania, is joining me along with Mr. Byron Soji Thomas, Deputy Director for Health Policy Research and Analysis at Health Policy Research Consortium. And we're talking about breast cancer awareness. And if you have any questions for Dr. Mitchell or Byron Soji Thomas, the number to call in is 1-800-450-7876. That's 1-800-450-7876. Byron Soji Thomas, I'm going to open up with you because you were talking about still additional ways that listeners can find screening, be it free or going through their doctors. Let me let you go ahead and finish your thoughts.
Oh, yeah. So, I was saying that we were going to make an effort to put these resources in one place so that if people can go to one place and find some of the resources that are available in our area. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention runs this National Breast and Cervical Cancer Early Detection Program, and they run it through the states, and each state has a provider and a resource they can go to if you want free or low-cost screening programs if you're not insured. But people who have insurance, as Dr. Mitchell has already described, are able to get these screenings at no additional cost.
Okay, sounds good. Now, we open up the show. Yes, Dr. Mitchell.
I'd like to add something to that. You know, with the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, we do have 20 million individuals who did not have insurance previously who are now insured. And therefore, an area of public policy is individuals knowing who they are sending to Congress from their community, from their locality, and from the state, such that we can continue the process of the Affordable Care Act. So it's very important for individuals to know who their representatives are,
and what are their beliefs and their policies regarding health and health insurance, therefore making sure that we are sending the right people to represent us in the state legislatures, in Congress, and for the President of the United States. So the vote is very important in terms of health care, and that's a part of health care policy. So I think we all should know who our representatives are and ask them what are their beliefs and their plans in terms of health care policy, and make sure we put the right people into the right positions that speak for us.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, this is a discussion we were definitely going to have later, but it's appropriate now. And Byron, you definitely have some feedback that you want to talk in that area. So let's talk about our policymakers, who they are specifically, and the role that they play, and what we can do as voters, as individuals, to make sure we put the right people in office. Why don't you talk more about that, Byron?
Well, yeah. Well, our program is designed to give the ordinary, to give citizens and voters the information and let them make their own choices about what they do with that. So our role is more to prepare the research, help make sure that people understand how research connects to policy, and help them understand how policy, help our listeners understand how policy impacts their lives. At that point, the choice belongs to each individual listener, each individual citizen, each individual patient, each individual voter. But there are resources for finding out what each policymaker thinks. We encourage that people would take the initiative to find out what their individual policymaker thinks and what they think their individual policymaker should know about their own lives and what their individual policymaker should know about how policies affect them. Beyond that, there's nothing, we're not allowed to say more than that other than to say that here's the information and leave it up to the individual person to make the decision.
And so can you outline a little more, and maybe Dr. Mitchell mentioned this, but exactly what role do the policy makers play in public policy? Tell us what they do.
Okay. So let's start with deciding, for example, what kind of coverage a health plan would have. The Affordable Care Act, for example, has a definition for what should go into the health plan. There are defined basics that each plan should meet, such as you having the opportunity to go get a screening like a mammogram at no additional cost, such as not allowing the health insurance plan to charge you more for your plan because you're a woman, such as not allowing the insurance companies anymore to deny you coverage because you have a pre-existing condition, such as making sure that at least 80% of every dollar you pay in a premium for the plan goes directly to your care and it doesn't go to overhead costs. These are all decisions that are made at the policy level, so that when the Affordable Care Act was being designed and the benefits were being considered, these were all the problems that the law was trying to fix. So at that level of determining what kind of benefits would go into a health plan, that's a policy-making decision. The decision about how many state dollars to allocate to paying for these screenings for people who are uninsured, that's a policy decision. How many dollars would go into helping people who are uninsured pay for these things? That's a policy decision. It's a policy decision to determine if there is anything in the law that isn't working well. For example, the law works best when you have a whole lot of people in the pool. If there are only mostly sicker patients in the pool, premiums go up for everybody. But if the pool also has healthier people, then the costs begin to go down for everybody. So if the pool only has the sicker people, then the premiums go up. Then sometimes the insurers get worried that we only have sicker people, so we'll have more claims, so this thing is going to cost us money, we won't make money, so we pull out. The policy decision there is to determine, well, how would we fix that? So that's a policy decision to be made. There's a policy decision to be made about collecting data about breast cancer in a state or in the nation, so that we know that as Dr. Mitchell has said, the incidence between African American and other races, the incidence rates, that is how often people get breast cancer, that's about similar across the races. But as Dr. Mitchell has said, black women are much more likely to die from the disease.
So
we need to collect data so we know that. If we don't collect data, we don't know that. So the decision to collect the data at that level is also a policy decision.
Well, let me ask this question too. So, and it's still a policy question. Here in Washington, D.C., in Ward 8, and that's just one of the wards, they do have extremely high incidences of breast cancer and mortality rates. And D.C. was once, I don't know if it still is, Dr. Mitchell and Byron, you would know, as far as one of the highest in the country. So if I'm living in Ward 8 and I know that there is a problem in Ward 8, what would I do as an individual to speak to a policymaker regarding what can be done in an area with such high incidence? And which policymaker would that be? Byron, let me go ahead and give that back to you.
Well, if you live in Ward 8, then you want to know who represents Ward 8 on the D.C. City Council. Once you find out who that is, that's easily that's easy information to find. You go to D.C. government's website, you can find who your Ward 8 council member is. Or you could go to the mayor's office and find out from them what the D.C. Department of Health is doing about breast cancer in Ward 8. So the D.C. government has a public health official in charge of public health for the city. So you would want to find out who that is and see if they have a breast cancer prevention program running in Ward 8.
So you
would want to find who your member of the D.C. Council is for Ward 8, and you'd want to find out what the D.C. Department of Health is doing about breast cancer screening and prevention.
And so that's what HPR wants to make us aware, is that we do have the power to influence policy, but we have to be able to rally around and come together as a group so that the policymakers will be able to understand how serious we are about the problems in our communities. This also applies to breast cancer.
Patricia, to add to that, what people can do in their own community, number one is to know what the risk factors for many disease processes are in their community. And you can find this information on the state website, and it's related to zip code. And we find that zip codes are really very important, so people can discuss this in their community events. They can have health policy forums at their churches or other community sites where people gather. So it's really community involvement that will help educate the community and the people in the community on what the risk factors are. And I find that the health policy groups and health educators in the churches really a very important area where one can get information about what diseases that are common in the community.
And you raise a very good point, because last month HPRC did a show about environmental issues and toxicity. And you just mentioned zip codes. Sometimes there are toxins within certain environments or zip codes that may be causing a problem. Is that right, Dr. Mitchell?
There could potentially be environmental hazards in the community. There can also be typical diets in communities. For example, there may be more fast food businesses. And the partake of fast foods that tend to have more fat and calories. So there are a number of reasons why individuals in a certain zip code might have a higher incidence of not only breast cancer, but other disease processes too. So therefore, it's very important that we know our community, that we discuss the disease processes with other community members so that we're more aware, and therefore we are taking charge of our health.
Okay.
Taking charge of your health involves making sure you're getting the screening, making sure you take advantage of not only your health plan, but other free areas in the community, and making sure we know who our representatives are that we are placing in office.
Okay.
And what their policies are.
Well, that is so important. I'm going to give Byron a chance to comment on this. And Dr. Mitchell, I'm going to come back to you because you opened the show with some powerful information about what we can do as individuals to help keep breast cancer at bay. And I think it bears repeating. And so before we do that, Byron, I'm going to let you comment on anything that Dr. Mitchell said, if you want to do that at this time.
Yeah, just a quick note about the differences that in who gets breast cancer that might be attributed to environmental issues. There's so much that we don't know about what happens in the environment that affects our body. There's some things we know, some things we don't. And so, for example, you could get situations where one population in one part of the country gets more breast cancer than another, and sometimes it might be environmental, sometimes it might be biology related, sometimes it might be access to care, but the causes and the reasons vary, but the differences do exist.
Okay. And so I want to go back to you, Dr. Mitchell. If you can just briefly run down that list of things that we can do as individuals to help keep breast cancer at bay, and then we're going to talk about symptoms after that. Go ahead.
Okay, so I think it's very important that individuals know their family history, making sure that their diet is low in fat and high in exercise, and that means 150 minutes of exercise per day. For individuals, you always should talk with your doctor first, but individuals who take one aspirin per day also have a lower incidence of not only breast cancer but other malignancies, and very important to undergo the appropriate screening, which you should talk to your doctor about. But every woman and man should know their family history, make sure that they are using preventive education, decreasing the fat in the diet, and increasing fresh vegetables and fruit in the diet, which can allow for not only a decrease in breast cancer, and I should also say decreasing the amount of alcohol in the diet and prevention of smoking or smoking cessation. So having good health is very important for not only decreasing the risk of breast cancer, but other cancers and other non-cancer disease processes.
Okay, that's very good information because that lets us know that we do have some control to some degree, a great degree, in terms of keeping breast cancer at bay. But let's talk about symptoms. I know by the time a woman feels a lump on her breast, that may still be a big problem. But are there some symptoms that we may be ignoring or may not relate to cancer that we may be missing, early signs, Dr. Mitchell?
There are no early signs of early breast cancer. By the time that one can feel a lump in the breast or some abnormality of the breast, that is usually late stage. But there could be blood coming from the nipple, swelling or redness, tenderness of the breast, as well as feeling a lump in the breast. So I think women should know their body, know what the breasts feel like, and know when there is a change in the breast. So any change in the breast, one should discuss it with their provider. We would like to diagnose breast cancer prior to the development of a lump or abnormality. So always good to talk with your healthcare provider, your doctor or whomever, so that you know your own breast. And that goes for women and men.
And men.
And if men find a lump in the breast, lumps in the breast of men are, number one, unusual. and number two, a way of finding breast cancer earlier in men. So know your body.
So give us a quick example of how to conduct and perform an appropriate self-exam.
So if one is going to do a self-exam, and of course by the research, breast exams or breast self-examination has not been shown to, quote, save lives, it's still important in diagnosing breast cancer. So one should, for women, examine the breast at least once per month, and it should be on the same at the same time of the month so that the menstrual cycle or other hormonal differences might not play a role.
Before you continue, let me ask, is there a certain time of the month, because you know how estrogen plays a role, is there a certain time of the month that we can feel that lump better than others?
No, it's just being consistent, so that I recommend to my patients choosing a date or something. For example, a lot of my patients will examine their breasts on the first Sunday of the month, or the 15th of the month, okay, or on a Monday or a Sunday. So choose a time that's convenient. There is no set time of the month that you should do this. And you want to examine the breast. After a shower is a good time because the skin is moist and supple. So I recommend that women stand in front of a mirror after a shower and examine their breast. Another good way to do that is when one is lying in bed and just carefully palpate and feel each part of both breasts. That is the best way to do it.
Okay, great. Now, I want to go back to a policy question. And Byron, I know that HPRC primarily focuses in the Mid-Atlantic region. And can you tell us what your research says about the states that are more proactive than others when it comes to policy making to reduce the cancer burden in their states? Do you have any data to report there?
Not specifically in terms of who's more proactive. We can say that some states have a slightly higher incidence than others, and some states have a slightly higher death rate than others, unfortunately. The district seems to have the highest death rate from breast cancer of any other of the five or six states in the region here. But they all have an actually aggressive position and posture toward treating breast cancer and doing breast cancer prevention. And they run them from a central place, from their public health facility at the state level and even at the county level. So as we have said, the CDC helps with helping people provide resources for screening for people who are uninsured. But the local health departments also take a rather proactive stance to help people with that, help get the word out. Local hospitals, as we've described, unfortunately, as I said, that, you know, the incidence is higher in some states than others, and the death rate is higher in some places than others. But they're all aggressive in terms of taking care of their cancer burden. The difference is in terms of how much up-to-date information each jurisdiction keeps about incidence, how much up-to-date information they have about death rate, how much up-to-date information they have about who's getting it and who's getting care and access to care and those kinds of things. But they're pretty uniform about that.
Okay. And Dr. Mitchell, I have a question for you. We have a very mature listening audience, and I want to ask a quick question. And if I have to bring you back in for a more detailed discussion about it, I want to talk about aging women and hormone replacement and the fear that a hormone replacement causes breast cancer. Can you address that for us?
Certainly. So as women age, there are changes in our body and changes in the hormone levels, and those changes lead to menopause, or what is called the change of life. Years ago, it was very common standard of care to administer estrogens to help decrease the hot flashes that occur with the change of life or menopause and other symptoms that occur during menopause. And there was the Women's Health Study some years ago from the National Institute of Health, where women were randomized to receive hormone replacement therapy or not. And what was found was that the women who received hormone replacement therapy or pills to ameliorate the signs of the menopause, these women had a higher incidence of breast cancer. Consequently, it is no longer the standard of care to administer hormone replacement therapy or estrogen pills or estrogen by patches to women because of this higher incidence of breast cancer. So if a woman has menopausal symptoms or hot flashes associated with the change of life, they should talk to their doctor about treatment to help ameliorate the symptoms and not routinely use over-the-counter estrogens, because there are some over-the-counter preparations as well. But again, know your body, know your health plan, talk with your healthcare provider or physician about any change in the body that needs attention.
And so let me ask one other question relating to that. With the men who get breast cancer, are they the ones who are aging and then they have a shift in getting more estrogen in their bodies than normal, than when they were younger? Is that part of the reason why men get it as well?
We don't know the etiology or reasons why some men develop breast cancer, and that's why it's so important to participate in clinical trials, because the clinical trials now are involved in trying to find reasons for the development of cancer, as well as those reasons that allow for more rapid growth of cancer in certain individuals. At this time, we do not know the reasons why most individuals develop cancer, and that includes breast cancer.
Okay. Well, I've been given the three-minute mark, and so, Dr. Mitchell, let me go ahead and give you a minute to give a call to action. Let us know what we really need to know, anything you may not have covered or something you want to reinforce. You have a minute to do that, and then I'll close out with you, Byron.
Thank you. So thank you very much, Patricia. One area that we haven't talked about, and that is the importance of the news media. And I thank you for having a program like this where we may reach the audience, and thanks to the audience for listening. And I encourage everyone, number one, take charge of your own health. Know what your health plan covers and make sure that you take advantage of that. See your physician or healthcare provider. Work with your community. Know what the community health is all about. Where are the community health institutions, that is the hospitals, clinics, physicians available, and take advantage of that. Take advantage of talking with others about the disease processes in the community, whether it's your church or other organizations. It can be social organizations, but okay, participate in those. So I thank you so much for allowing me to be on the program today, and I look forward to talking with you in the future, Patricia.
I'm looking forward to it as well. You bet. So let's get Byron in. Byron, any closing remarks or call to action for our listeners?
Sure. Well, HPRC, the Health Policy Research Consortium, is very happy to have had this forum, and that's why we come the second Saturday of every month at noon to do these conversations, so we can connect the dots between what matters to your health and what public policy has to do with it. How can public policy impact your health, and how you can influence public policy by being engaged and being informed. And so HPRC at hprc.info, we have social media presence on Twitter and on Facebook. And so keep in touch with us, follow us on social media, come to our website, hprc.info, listen to the program every second Saturday of the month, and we're doing a public policy forum in Philadelphia on October 27th and one in Morgantown, West Virginia on November 11th. And we want to continue these conversations about a number of different topics. And thanks for listening.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. That is, we're out of time. Thank you, Dr. Mitchell and Byron Soji Thomas. And thank you to our listeners. We want to make sure that you know that you can go to www.MakeTheChangeRadioShow and listen to the archives and follow us on social media. And tune in next Saturday for more lively discussions about how you can make positive changes in your life.
If you live in Prince George's County, Maryland, listen up for this important announcement about how you can gain access to resources that can improve your health. The Health Policy Research Consortium, also known as HPRC, has a mobile app called Health Connect Prince George's that can help you find local resources such as farmers markets, parks and hike trails, recreation centers, community health centers, hospitals, pharmacies, and much more. The Health Connect Prince George's app is available for download on Google Play and the iTunes App Store. You can also visit www.hprc.info. That's www.hprc.info and click the links at the bottom of the page. Download the Health Connect app today to connect you and your community to a healthier tomorrow.
The research and information that we report during today's broadcast was supported by the National Institute on Minority Health and Health Disparities of the National Institutes of Health under award number 5U54MD00860802. The content is solely the responsibility of the authors and does not necessarily represent the official views of the National Institutes of Health.
Remember to tune in to Make the Change every Saturday from 12 noon p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also visit with Patricia at www.patriciaterrell.com for links to social media, email, and blogs. Thank you for listening today, and remember that changing the world starts with changing you.